All right, good evening. Let's turn on over to Hebrews chapter 9. Larry, I'm not sure how I'm going to bring the fire tonight, but this is not quite a fire and brimstone message, but I can try. It is a little chilly out there, so I can just change the message completely. Actually, Hebrews 10, maybe I could bring one of those. There is a fire and brimstone type message that could be in there. In Hebrews chapter 9, there is a kind of touchy subject that we could bring up towards the end, in as much as it is appointed for men to die once, after this comes judgment. So maybe we could talk about judgment tonight. I don't know. What do you guys think? No, we're not going to talk about that tonight. We're not even that far into chapter 9 yet. But we are done with the first part of chapter 9, and we are moving on to another section, which probably will be done tonight. So we at length, we cover the tabernacle. We got to see what that looks like. And how many of you feel like you have a really good grip on the tabernacle now? Like you've got it down. You know, you started having dreams of it. And you saw yourself walking through it, and you saw it playing out in your mind. Hopefully, the idea is that you did, maybe in your own time, watch a video. There's really good videos on YouTube. You can watch certain videos that I've shown to some of the kids in my Sunday school, where they actually, you know, it's like, oh, there's silver, you know, sockets on the bottom of the tabernacle, where they would place the wood. And then you get to see where they're overlaid with gold. And then you get to see which curtain they put over first. There were several different layers you actually get to go through. If you want, go watch a YouTube video. You can find one that would be 5 to 10 minutes long. And that, to me, is really helpful. I don't have a screen up here where I can just show you these little clips. Maybe that's the future. You know, this is 2025 now. Maybe that is the future. I don't know. But if you can easily find it on your own time as well. And those things are really, really helpful. Again, you can start to actually see what they were dressed like, how this all kind of plays out. I'm not going to have you necessarily watch a video of, you know, how to slaughter an animal appropriately and, you know, distribute the blood. But, you know, the videos are really helpful, is all I'm trying to say. Go on your own time and take a look at some stuff, and hopefully that will be encouraging to you, as it has been to me. But we did talk about tabernacle, so now we're moving on a little bit. We will talk a little bit more about the animal sacrifice in the future, maybe not so much today. Chapter 10, we'll probably talk a little bit more about sacrifices. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about it. So let's pick it up in Hebrews chapter 9, verse 11, and we're going to go through the rest of the chapter. But when Christ appeared, this is Hebrews 9:11. Okay. But when Christ appeared as a high priest of the good things to come, he entered through the greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is to say, not of this creation. And not through the blood of goats and calves, but through his own blood, he entered the holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. For if the blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling those who have been defiled sanctify for the cleansing of the flesh, how much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without blemish to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God? For this reason, he is the mediator of a new covenant, so that since a death has taken place for the redemption of the transgressions that were committed under the first covenant, those who have been called may receive the promise of the eternal inheritance. For where a covenant is, there must be a necessity, be the death of the one who made it. For a covenant is valid only when men are dead, for it is never enforced while the one who made it lives. Therefore, even the first covenant, was it not inaugurated without blood? For when every commandment had been spoken by Moses to all the people according to the law, he took the blood of calves and the goat and the goats with the water and scarlet wool and hyssop and sprinkled both the book itself and all the people, saying, "This is the blood of the covenant which God commanded you." And in the same way, he sprinkled both the tabernacle and all the vessels of the ministry with the blood. And according to the law, one may almost say, all things are cleansed with blood. And without shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness. Therefore, it was necessary for the copies of these things in the heavens to be cleansed with these, but the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these. For Christ did not enter a holy place made with hands, a mere copy of the true one, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. Nor was it that he would offer himself often as the high priest enters the holy place year by year with blood that is not his own. Otherwise, he would have needed to suffer since the foundation of the world. But now, once at the consummation of the ages, he has been manifested to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. And inasmuch as it is appointed for men to die once, and after this comes judgment, so Christ also, having been offered once to bear the sins of many, will appear a second time for salvation, without reference to sin, to those who eagerly await him. All right, perfect. So, lots of these things, hopefully I can make it easy to understand. I try not to get too caught up in the little details, but I also want to bring out maybe some new things maybe you haven't heard before, or just dive into a certain aspect of it, because for me those are really helpful. Oh, we talked about, you know, in chapter 9, we're gonna talk about the red heifer a little bit. Maybe you have heard of the ashes of the red heifer, maybe you haven't. How many of you got to hear the term red heifer a bunch, I think this last year, right? Was it this last year? It came up a bunch. Red heifer. People kept mentioning red heifer a lot. And do y'all know why that kept coming up? A bunch of, I'm not going to go too far down that road, why other people, but what was coming up is that the solar eclipse, right? And so people get really weird about all that stuff. They start thinking, you know, Jesus is coming back, you know. And then they start talking about there's these perfect red heifers. I think they were in Texas or something. You know, they're being delivered. They're without blemish. We're going to get back to, you know, the old sacrificial system, essentially. Just to kind of cut to where people are trying to get to. And they said, I watched this one video of this Baptist guy, and he said, we haven't seen this particular line and these heifers with this amount of lack of blemishing in like so many years, at least decades. It might have been even more. I don't know. I tuned it out by then. He said, we haven't seen this for a long time. He's like, so this means something good is happening. Like God is obviously preparing for us to get these things shipped from Texas to Jerusalem, you know, yada, yada, yada. It's just the things that people are coming up with just cracked me up. There are a lot of really good-looking cattle in Texas. I can verify that firsthand. Some of my best friends growing up, they showed cattle. They showed, I think they showed steers, but primarily they showed Beefmaster heifers. And so I always liked the Beefmaster cattle. I'm you know, kind of going off the rails here a little bit. But, you know, cattle, they're really cool. But this is not where God really was going. He had a specific reason for these sacrifices, which we got to see in Kevin's class. So, Christ, we understand that when he entered into the holy place, the most holy place, he did not enter into one made with human hands. Right? He didn't go into the most holy place, the Holy of Holies, in the on an earthly tabernacle. Well, the earthly tabernacle wasn't even around at that point. You know, it's a temple, Herod's temple, totally different. Much larger, and very, if you look at pictures of that as well, you'll see how, you know, he liked showing off. It was very grand. You know, the tabernacle was more of a, obviously more of a temporal thing. It was more, I don't want to say cheap. It was obviously fine for the time. But if you look at the temple, Solomon's temple, Herod's temple, those things were much bigger in comparison, even in size-wise. But Jesus, he enters into the most holy place, and he doesn't enter into a physical one, though. He goes into heaven itself. Now remember, this might be drawing back a lot on our memory bank going throughout Hebrews. But remember in Hebrews chapter 5, he talks about Jesus being high priest, and it says he was designated high priest. When really was that fully manifested? The designation of Jesus as high priest. According to the book of Hebrews. Yeah, he sins. When he ascends, he is designated high priest, and that is when he's going to cleanse the holy place, which we'll get to that later in chapter 9, right? But there's a tremendous amount of emphasis placed on this throughout the book of Hebrews. Hopefully you guys have got high priest out of this discussion on Hebrews. If you don't get high priest, I've failed. Hebrews puts a tremendous amount of emphasis on Jesus being our high priest, and he's going into the heavenly tabernacle now. A lot of this is building off of itself. So he says in verse 11, he says, he entered the greater, more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, as to say, not of this creation. And not through the blood of goats and calves. Now, he's going to mention a couple times here in verse 12 and verse 13, he mentions goats and bulls, their blood. That would be pretty much everything. That would encompass a lot of things. Not everything, but it would encompass a lot. But in particular, I mean, you can go back and listen to Kevin's class, why that might be. But this is also going to be encompassing a very important day. Remember, on the Day of Atonement, what is the blood? There's two sacrifices where he takes the blood back on the Day of Atonement. What are the two creatures that are sacrificed that he takes their blood back on the Day of Atonement into the holy place with? What were they? The blood of a bull the first time, right? And then the blood of a goat another time. So you see, he's saying here, he says the blood of goats and calves and blood of goats, bulls, he's like, these things are not, those are inferior. Remember, Hebrews, he's consistently saying, inferior, inferior. The old was inferior, inferior. The new is superior. So Jesus is our high priest. He does not enter into a physical tabernacle, and he does not enter with physical blood. What does he enter with? Spiritual, right? Now, this is an interesting conversation that could arise because, you know, obviously it's through his blood, right? It is through his sacrifice that he enters, but it was not the physical blood itself. How many of y'all have seen Ben-Hur? The original, sorry, not the newer one. I forgot there was a newer one. I haven't even seen the newer one, but the original one, the old one, you know, that's way long, and I actually enjoyed it. I used to like that movie a lot. remember when Jesus, I don't want to butcher this, but I think I could be totally wrong about how this all plays out, but from my memory, remember when Jesus was crucified, there was like rain, was there not? It was like raining, and then the picture was there was blood coming down and the streams of the rain. And I was, obviously it's a really cool picture, you know, the thought of Jesus' blood does cleanse, and it absolutely does. But again, it wasn't the physical aspect, you know, and I was thinking about if Jesus had to offer his physical blood in the true holy place, number one, he's going into the spiritual realm, but number two, somebody better be catching it, right? And somebody would have to catch that. And I think about Ben-Hur and the blood would just be all over in the water. Obviously, that's not really what he's saying. This is a spiritual communication. All of this is a spiritual communication. But it is Jesus' perfect sacrifice. That is the one that was necessary. And that is the one that was so good and it was so perfect that it only had to happen once. Now, if you go on, actually, let's take a look at Hebrews chapter 10. Let's just look at the first four verses real quick. So Hebrews 10, verse 1, it says, for the law, since it only has only a shadow of the good things to come and not the very form of things, can never, by the same sacrifices which they offer continually year by year, make perfect those who draw near. Otherwise, they would not have ceased to be offered, because the servers, having once been cleansed, would no longer have had consciousness of sins. But in those sacrifices, there is a reminder of sins year by year, for it is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins. I'm not jumping ahead to Hebrews 10 per se, but all of this is so heavily intertwined. The writer of Hebrews is going to make this absolutely clear. The blood of goats and bulls did not take away their sins. It was there for a reason. It was the thing that was getting them from A to B. But the writer of Hebrews makes this clear, and he goes on and he says, actually, it did almost the opposite. I'm kind of jumping on Hebrews 10 right now, but it almost did the opposite thing of taking away sin. Is that it kind of became a reminder to them about how sinful they really were. Oh man. Every single year, we have to go look at the Day of Atonement, we've talked about all the good things about that. But if every single year, you know, let's just take tax season, for example, right? How many of you are excited about tax season? You know, it's very exciting. No, I'm almost, all my income is self-employed. Well, not a decent amount is. So tax season is my least favorite. It is absolutely ridiculous. There's a lot of money that you can lose in tax season. Where was I going exactly with that? Tax season is not very fun. Anyways, think about where there's a certain point each year that you have to get to, and you have to pay a price, right? You have to pay a certain price of whatever your income was. And so every single year, Day of Atonement, or whenever you have to make an offering to God, think about the price they're having to. They're not just bringing, you know, X amount of dollars. They're actually bringing their livestock. They're actually bringing things that they have worked for. They're bringing things that are valuable to them, and so it would be uncomfortable. And obviously, they understand. You know, this is obviously pleasing to God. They want to be pleasing to God. The righteous person would. But every single year, what ends up happening is that you just keep being reminded about, wow, the sin of Israel, the sin of Israel, the sin of Israel. I hope that this offering is pleasing to God. I hope the high priest comes back out. We can cheer for him, right? And I'm totally jumping on chapter 10 right now. But that's the thing about this system, is that it never was meant to be permanent. So when we go back to Hebrews 9 and 11, he says it's not through the blood of goats and calves, but through his own blood. Jesus is the perfect sacrifice. He entered the holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. I talked about the once last time. So there's another sacrifice he mentions here. It's the blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of a heifer, sprinkling those who have been defiled, sanctify for the cleansing of the flesh. Let's take a look at Numbers chapter 19. All right, Numbers chapter 19. The ashes of a red heifer. What are these primarily going to be? I guess not what's sin, but the reason why you need to have the ashes of a red heifer sprinkled on you with water was for a specific reason. It's because you were unclean for a specific reason. What specific reason would have caused you to be unclean that you needed the ashes of a red heifer sprinkled on you? Yes. The dead body, right? This is really a big thing that comes up here. We'll take a look at this. So Numbers chapter 19, let's look at verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "This is the statute of the law which the Lord has commanded, saying, speak to the sons of Israel, that they may bring you an unblemished red heifer, in which is no defect, and on which a yoke has never been placed." Just want to clarify something real quick. If you're not familiar with livestock terms, heifer is an unbred female cow. It'd be a younger female cow. Obviously, this would also be one that had never worked. So you have cow as the general term, but cow is also like a mama cow. That'd be a female. Cow is like a female term. And then bull would be the male, and then heifer would be a young female. So this would be a young female cow. So, and they also said unblemished no defect, and never had been worked. There'd never been a yoke on her either. So this is why the Texans, they had the perfect cattle, right? I don't know why there had never been another one for years and years before, but they had a group of them. Anyways, so you shall give it, verse 3, you shall give it to Eleazar, the priest, and it shall be brought outside the camp and be slaughtered in his presence. Next, Eleazar, the priest, shall take some of the blood with his finger and sprinkle it toward the front of the tent of meeting 7 times. Then the heifer shall be burned in his sight, its hide, flesh, and its blood, and its refuse shall be burned. The priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop, scarlet material, and cast it in the midst of the burning heifer. The priest shall then wash his clothes and bathe his body in water, and afterward come into the camp, but the priest shall remain unclean until evening. The one who burns it shall also wash his clothes in water, and shall bathe in the body, and shall be unclean until evening. Now a man who is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer and deposit them outside the camp in a clean place, and the congregation of the sons of Israel shall keep it as water to remove impurity, the purification from sin. The one who gathers the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening, and it shall be a perpetual statute to the sons of Israel and to the alien who sojourns among them. The one who touches the corpse of any person shall be unclean for 7 days. And he'll go on and he'll talk about different things. Let's also look at verse 14, Numbers 19, verse 14. This is the law: when a man dies in a tent, everyone who comes into the tent and everyone who is in the tent shall be unclean for 7 days. And he does clarify, and he says, if you don't go through this process, you shall be cut off from your people. You are unclean, which cut off is likened to basically you're dead. You're dead. And in some cases, it was you're actually going to be killed right there. And then at the very least, it is you are dead to God's covenant. You're gone. They go on and says a few other things. But the big thing that we just need to take from this is that the ashes, they have this cow, right? They take it outside the camp. They slaughter it. Then they take the blood, they sprinkle it towards the tent of meeting, the door of the tent of meeting, 7 times, and they burn this whole thing. They burn the whole cow. Once they have burned it down, then they take those ashes and they will use those for purification with water. They'll do flowing water with the ashes. This would be what they would sprinkle on somebody who came in contact with a dead person, or even if you were in a tent. And I wanted to read verse 14. If you came into a tent where there was also a dead person, you would be unclean just by being in the tent with that person. There's many different things maybe we could bring that, you know, we could say this relates to the new covenant. But it's interesting that he brings this up. He says, think about the ashes, right? The ashes of the heifer. Those things are still not, they're still inferior to the superior sacrifice, which is Jesus. He even brings that up as well. But I did want to take a second to talk about the heifer, or just that whole thing right there. It's kind of a weird conversation, but I did have a job. I was working at a specific place several years ago where I did, and I'm going to leave a lot of details out. I don't know like what's allowed to be said, but for the sake of my job. But I worked at a specific place where they had dead bodies. It was interesting. And, they asked me if I was fine with that while they were working. I was like, sure, because I was there for an extended period of time, and I actually got to be in a freezer I had to run stuff in a freezer, and so there were several bodies, and I saw a handful of them exposed and out, and they were actually working on them. It was a very unsettling thing coming from somebody who had never really seen that before. And being around dead people is it was very surreal. And especially in the nature of that one, because they were doing autopsies and different things. It was weird. I remember Morgan would say she didn't want me to come near her unless I had washed a lot. She said clean up a bunch, and I remember showering, cleaning, but there still was this aspect where I felt not dirty, but I still felt, I don't want to say tainted, but the damage was already done, I guess. I had already seen too much. It was unsettling, okay? I don't know why I'm smiling, but it was unsettling. And I think about that when I think about, you know, verses like this, right? God said, even if you came, and I didn't touch anything, I didn't touch any of those people, but he's like, even if you came into a tent where there are these, where there's a dead body, he's like, you're unclean as well. And, you know, the thing is that God, where he's going to be going with chapter 9 and chapter 10, which we're going to hit on, is he's really trying to get to the conscience. He's trying to get to the inner part. So, like I said, I had washed up, I had cleaned a lot. I felt I probably was more clean than I was before. I was very clean. But what it still did to me internally was still there. I didn't have a bad conscience about it, but all of the imagery was still in my head. It was still there. All of that was still there. And not necessarily that it's the end of the world if you come in contact with a dead body, but God, he was communicating certain things throughout his, really throughout all of Israel's past, and he even is now through his word. And that the conscience cannot be reached by just merely physical things. These merely physical things will not reach the conscience. In the sake of, because I've thought about this a little bit, thinking about what is, you know, God made a lot of interesting rules about what's clean and what's unclean, right? Like pigs. Why are pigs unclean to eat? You know, and we could go into all of the details. You know, God was looking out for Israel. He was making sure, you know, with the seafood, right? When you go look at seafood and what certain shellfish or whatever, these different things can cause if you don't know how to handle them and cook them properly, what to look for, you can, certain diseases. We could go into all of that. But you also have to think that there is these people, God's the Israelites, and God's taking them out of Egypt. And what's the first thing that they want to do once they think Moses is gone? And when he goes up on the mountain for a while, he's gone for a while, what do? They resort to making a golden calf. And then the implication of them dancing and whatever is actually much more than just, you know, dancing to a song that they like. They had gone backwards, if you will, into godless, immoral behavior. I'll leave it at that. And a lot of the things that were, even the golden calf itself is a communication of certain things such as fertility, Baal. There's different things that would be communicated going back to their pagan influence from the Egyptians. And then also not even you also have to consider that there would be people that came out of Egypt with them. Remember, Moses marries a Cushite woman, which would be south of Egypt. But there's lots of people that came out of Egypt with the Israelites. So when Moses is, he's gone for a while, what do they end up doing? They end up going back to some of these pagan-like things. Like, why would you have a golden calf? Well, if you look back at where they had come from, there was a lot of influence from Egyptian paganistic rituals that would have been influencing that. And so God, what he wanted to do is he wanted to bring his people out, and not just physically out of Egypt, he wanted to bring them mentally and spiritually out of Egypt as well. So I'll get there in 1 second, Larry. God, what he does when he makes his law, obviously he's working towards the new covenant. But even rewinding back a little bit, he's also making a very distinct line for what is clean and unclean, what is right and what is wrong. They had these very black and white. You know, I was thinking about my son, Asa. I tell him, I say, don't go touch the oven oftentimes. At least I used to. I'd be like, don't touch the oven. And, you know, 95% of the time it's fine, right? It's not that big a deal. It's like, well, is it going to hurt you to eat pork? Well, why did God tell him, don't eat pork, you'll be unclean, you know? But I tell Asa, I say, don't go touch the oven. And it's because I'm making these black and white things. I want him to see very clearly, this is a rule. You will observe it. And, you know, 95% of the time, the oven is not on, and he's not going to be in trouble, so it's fine. But it's a rule that I'm making, just a black and white rule, because he can't understand the difference of when it's on or when it's not. So I don't want him to risk that 5% chance he goes and touches it when it's hot. God, not saying it's exactly the same, but with Asa, I have to make very blanket black and white rules that are very easy to understand, and it's because I'm trying to instill certain principles and to build his character. Sometimes I'm just trying to teach him to obey. But God, same thing. He has these things throughout the Old Testament. Obviously, they're going to be foreshadowing the new, but there still is this element that God is just making things very clear. This is right and this is wrong. This is righteous and this is not. And so when they come in contact with the dead body, he says, you are unclean. There's a communication with death that is now instilled in their mind. And when they come in contact, they are in the same building, whatever. You know, I didn't go after I had worked at that job and been in the same building under the same tent as a dead person. I didn't go and get ashes sprinkled on me with water. But that would have been what would have been necessary under the old.
So yeah, this is really good. And I don't know if this is where you're going with it, but it kind of brought to my mind when you brought up them worshiping the golden calf as soon as Moses, you know, was gone for a little while. And because their psyche reverted back to what was known. And that's what God is trying to do in Hebrews 9. He's trying to say that really didn't work, the cleansing of the flesh. He's saying that blood sprinkled on that didn't work. You got to get your brain cleansed. You got to get your spirit cleansed. And this is so proven. It's true. So many people, you know, Asa probably has no fear of falling. Because he's like, I don't know about falling. How'd you get back up? Come on, it's easy. Okay, fast forward, you know, and you find someone who's 70, 80 years old, and what do? They shuffle. It's proven they don't have to shuffle. They shuffle because they're scared of falling. That's the reason they shuffle, because they've fallen in the past. They don't want to fall again, okay? And that's how it is. So many of our choices we make in life, I was just reading something, and it's crazy, but it's very true. So many of our choices and decisions we make are based upon what's imprinted on our psyche from the past. That's exactly what nailed the Israelites as they came out of Egypt. And this is exactly what God's trying to deal with here in Hebrews 9. He's saying, we went into the heavens, and you are totally cleansed. So go for there in Hebrews 9. So I don't know if that's where you were going, but anyhow, that's what came through my brain.
That's exactly where I'm going. So thank you. That's good. Yeah, I was thinking about Peter. After things didn't go the way he thought they would, what does he revert back to? He goes back to fishing.
I guess somewhat related. There's this Hungarian physician. His name was Ignaz Semmelweis in the 1900s. It's around 1840. Was noticing that in his hospital, the mortality rate in giving birth was 1 in 5. And so, yeah, women were, I mean, it was kind of playing a dangerous game, you know, to have kids. And he finally figured out later that they had a research hospital. This is what made me think of it. And you're talking about that job you did, you know. They had a research hospital in the basement where they performed, you know, they worked on dead bodies. And so these physicians would, you know, work their day job downstairs and come upstairs and then deliver children. And they didn't even wash their hands. You know, I mean, we literally figured out to wash our hands in the 1800s. We discovered germs in the 1800s. And then thousands and thousands of years earlier, God's people are the only people on the earth that are washing their hands before they eat their food. You're like, in the moment, it kind of reminds me of your story of Asa, where it's like, you know, God's, you know, he doesn't really maybe understand why, you know. I mean, but God's people, the only people on earth that are washing their hands ceremonially. I mean, that was a Hebrew thing. So God, you know, the pigs, the washing the hands, you have lots of things that God gave that maybe that he didn't explain fully to them, but that he knew would be important. And then here we are, you know, thousands of years later, just you know, figuring out that what germs are, and, you know, one of the best ways to, you know, to get rid of it. So he made them wash their hands, and the mortality rate dropped to 1 in 100 overnight. So
that's an interesting statistic. There you go. You guys are just putting the nail in the coffin on my argument against Morgan. No, I'm just kidding. She's always telling me to wash my hands, and I'm pretty good about it now. I'm well trained. All right, where Larry was going is exactly where I'm going. Hebrews chapter 9. I think this is exactly where the writer of Hebrews is going. I just wanted to bring up the ashes of a heifer. You probably have heard of it before, but if you hadn't, there you go. So we think about really the context which Larry was bringing up. All of these things, again, what they never really got to was the inner man. They're all external, right? Even the washing of the hands, yes. When you practice good sanitary practices, you will probably get sick less often. You will live, there will be less mortality rate in childbirth, right? But at the end of the day, does it really get to the heart? It sanctifies for the flesh, but does it get to the conscience? And so that's what he says here. He says in verse 13, the blood, goats, bulls, ashes of a heifer sprinkling, those who've been defiled sanctify for the cleansing of the flesh. So the sacrifices, what they do, they cleanse for the flesh. They did sanctify, which is a good thing, right? They did actually set apart. They did actually sanctify. But it was just for the flesh. It never really got down deep into the heart. And that's why in chapter 10, he's going to discuss that. How much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without blemish to God, notice Jesus is the sacrifice without blemish. He was absolutely perfect, never sinned. He was holy, right? He had the perfect haircut. No, I'm just kidding. But Jesus was without blemish. He was the perfect sacrifice. No sin. And he's the Son of God as well. Without blemish to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God. Hebrews is going to make this abundantly clear that under the old, you could not have a perfect conscience. You couldn't. And like I pretty much already said that earlier in chapter 10, I already jumped ahead a little bit, but that's the sacrifices, they never really perfected your conscience. What they would end up doing is reminding you of your failing every time. Oh, I failed. Well, now I'm going to have to make this long journey, and I got to think about this, I got to do this. And you had to literally plan out this whole thing, how to make things right on your end. Now, I want to make something clear, and I would say it definitely did something for your conscience, right? If the guy who knows that he's unclean, and then the guy who is not doing anything, right? I'm sure his conscience was just wrecking him if he knows he's unclean and he's not doing anything about it. But could you have a perfect conscience? Could you have one that takes you all the way home to the end? No. And that's what Hebrews, he's going to say. He's going to say all of these different things. He said, well, the blood of goats, bulls, even the ashes of a heifer, right? Those things, they were good for sanctifying for the flesh, but how much more will Jesus and his perfect sacrifice, the actual one without blemish, cleanse your conscience? And he actually says, from dead works to serve the living God. So we are not under the dead works of before. We are not held back to our transgressions and our deadness before we were found in Christ. Those things are gone. He said, your conscience is clean. Let's go to 1 Peter 3 real quick. You guys are really familiar with this one, but we'll take a look at it. Where does that blood... Oh, we're going to look at Hebrews 10 too, but where does that blood really... Where do we come in contact with the blood? When? We come in contact with the blood when we are immersed into Jesus. Amen? That's when we come in contact. And this is when it's going to be sprinkled. So 1 Peter chapter 3, let's take a look at verse... let's just grab context. Verse 18, for Christ also died for sins once for all, the just for the unjust, so that he might bring us to God, having been put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the Spirit, in which he also Also, he went and made proclamation to the spirits now in prison, who once were disobedient when the patience of God kept waiting in the days of Noah during the construction of the ark, in which a few, that is, eight persons, were brought safely through water. Corresponding to that, immersion now saves you, not the removal of dirt from the flesh, but an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. What are we appealing to God for in our immersion? A good conscience. Could we rephrase good conscience to clean? Yeah, right? A clean conscience. So Hebrews is making the point. He's making this really clear. He's saying, what they couldn't do with the sacrifices of the old, Jesus can do. And we get to appeal for that clean conscience. Man, can you imagine being under the old covenant system, having to make all of these, you know, consistent sacrifices and offerings, and then you find out there's one that can do it for all time, right? It's like, I don't know a great example, but it's like getting a car that you have to keep filling the gas on, right? And you're like, man, and then eventually you find out in the year 3000, they're going to come out with a car that you only have to fill one time for all time. And they're just thinking, wow, that's a great deal. Jesus is the one sacrifice for all time. You don't have to keep doing this anymore as the communication, and because your conscience is also going to be cleansed. So let's go back to Hebrews chapter 9. I was going to have us look at Ephesians 2 as well, but we don't have time for it. remember, who does the serving under the old covenant? Well, New Testament, but under the old covenant, who is doing service? The priests, right? So the priests are doing service to God. In verse 14, our consciences are cleansed from dead works to what? Serve the living God. Well, that makes a lot of sense when we understand that we are priests, right? Just a little side note. So let's do verse 15. For this reason, Jesus is the mediator of a new covenant, so that since a death has taken place for the redemption of the transgressions that were committed under the first covenant, those who have been called may receive the promise of the eternal inheritance. We'll close up here tonight. One of the things that we'll also find out in chapter 10 and later is that Jesus' sacrifice was not only good looking forward, but it was good looking backward, right? So we think about Hebrews 11, I think he makes the point, they wouldn't even be made perfect apart from us. But think about all the people under the first covenant. He actually makes this clear. He says, for the transgressions that were committed under the first covenant. Everybody, before you enter into the second one, in a way, you're kind of breaking the law. But we can also look backwards. And he says, for those who have been called, that they may receive the eternal inheritance. Who has been called? The Christians, right? Have you been called by God? Or you just fall in a pit one day and it just happened that way, you know? I just accidentally fell into a pool and got baptized, you know? No, you were called, right? God called you. You are chosen. And I'm not going to go into the frozen chosen discussion. There's a whole another class for that. But you are called and you are chosen of God. And God loves you so much that he set all of this apart. He sacrificed. I didn't even cover Jesus' sacrifice as much as we probably will in the future. But it says he was without blemish. Every sacrifice that had to be made under the old covenant, there was value to it. It's not a sacrifice if you're not that. I mean, I think even Kevin mentioned you couldn't just show up empty-handed. You had to bring something. Every sacrifice, there was something of value to that thing. If you had raised that sheep or you had raised that goat, whatever you had, there was value to that. And that's what makes it a sacrifice. It's not a sacrifice if you're not. It doesn't hurt, I guess. But Jesus, he is the perfect sacrifice. Think about the cost that how that felt to God, having to sacrifice his only son. without blemish. He's his perfect son too. And it's like, I look at Asa and I'm thinking about, wow, the thought of having to sacrifice Asa, the thought of Abraham having to sacrifice Isaac. And he wasn't even, it's not, it's like a conversation. He's like a third party. What does this guy even have to do with this discussion, you know? And this guy is having to pay the cost. Isaac, don't worry about it, you know, God's going to provide. God will provide. I think about Asa, and I'm thinking about, wow, that would, I don't know what that would look like. I prayed to God that I never have to be put in that position. But think about Jesus and God having to sacrifice his only begotten son, his only son. He's the perfect sacrifice. So God obviously has he loves us greatly. He says that we are called. Jesus being a mediator. Sorry, I won't have any time for any more comments. But Jesus being the mediator, that word for mediator just means like a middleman. It's the go-between. So Jesus is the one that actually makes this all play out, really is the idea. He's the one that is actually executing the plan. He's the one that's making this all work. And so really just a tremendous amount of love that God has poured out on us and a tremendous amount of foreshadowing throughout the Old Testament. So we'll close up with that tonight. Thank you.